February 21st, we're learning Mishnah, Bava Kamma, Chapter 3. We're going to do Mishnayot 9 and, I hope, 10, getting near the end of the chapter. So this is Perek Gimel Mishnah Tet, again, the third chapter, the ninth Mishnah. It's pretty straightforward. It goes like this. Shor Shaveh Maneh, Shenagach Shor Shaveh Ma'atayim. Which means that a...
Maneh is 100?
Right. A ox that is shaveh, right, that's equal maneh, equals 100, it's worth 100. Shenagach shor shaveh matayim, that gored an ox that's worth 200. Veina nevela yafa klum. And the carcass is not worth anything. Here, it's interesting, it uses a different word to mean the same idea of equal. Yafa klum, it's not worth anything.
I thought it Earl said it's shava. Not beautiful.
Right, but that's what it means. I really don't know. You didn't understand what I said. There, in one sentence here, the word in English equals, its Hebrew equivalent is two different words. The second word of the Mishnah is shor shaveh, mm-hmm. shor that's worth, that equals. Mm-hmm. And the second to last word that I read was mm-hmm. yafa klum, worth nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why didn't say shava? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yafa chlum is really like the peel of the garlic.
Right. So anyway, so an ox that's worth 100 killed an ox that's worth 200, and for some reason the carcass is not worth anything. So what's the law? No tell it to shore. He takes the ox. We have to figure out who the he is. So who is the he that takes the ox?
The guy yeah. that had the nevelah that is not worth anything.
Yeah. Right, so the person whose ox, that's shaveh ma'atayim, worth 200, mm-hmm. Lost it completely. He gets the living ox that did the goring. That mm-hmm. ox is worth only maneh, only 100.
Mm-hmm.
So you could. It seems like what we should understand here...
He gets half.
He gets half,
yeah.
right? It was a short tam that did the nigiha, did the goring, has to pay half. No, that can't be.
Mm-mm.
That can't be. If it had to pay half, then it would only have to pay 50. Why does it pay 100?
Why did you say that?
The one
that
sure was killed. Maneh.
Killed I'm one sorry. That was worth 200.
Right, worth 200.
So,
right.
So half
it, is it pays than. The whole thing. It pays itself, which is half of what it cause damage. Sorry about that.
Then why do they bring it? It's exactly like the Torah. Why should they quote it?
The Torah actually is not so clear at all.
Oh.
Right. We're going to get into that right now.
But I thought we did learn that Tom pays half.
Right. We learned that Tom pays half. But here it's setting up this case in comparison to a case that's about to come.
Oh.
You're right. That case in and of itself might not have a big chidush in it.
Right.
Pretty clear. But let's take the next case, compare it to the next case. Shor shaveh ma'atayim, shenagach shor shaveh ma'atayim. An ox that's mm-hmm. worth 200, gored an ox that's worth 200, vein hanevela yafa klum. And again, the carcass is not worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to be the law? We know. Right, they're going to take the living ox that's 200, and only 100 of it goes to the guy who lost his ox, and the other 100 stays with the guy that owns the goring ox. So, Amar Rabbi Meir.
So, would that mean then, if it was my ox that did the goring and gored your ox, I mean, clearly it doesn't make sense to give half of an ox, so I give you the ox. And then you have to give me back 100?
Well, the way it's phrased is that the Beit Din sells the ox, the living ox.
So the Beit Din would sell the living ox, and then you'd
and
get
split it.
You'd get 100.
Yeah, exactly how that works. Is it the Beit Din that sells it, or does it go over to the guy who lost his ox and has to give back? That's going to be a complicated question that the Gemara gets into quite a bit. Because what happens if the value changes in the middle of the process?
Yeah. And I want to know now, we've got an ox that was Tom, but we've got one recorded instance here of goring. So now, is this really the ox that I would want to have if I wound up with this ox through you know, it being sold or whatever. I mean, this ox now is sort of like, is this ox going to do it again?
You're talking about a third party that bought the ox. Great, right, so it has one check against it.
So its value is probably reduced.
It could be. I don't know. That's not what the Mishnah deal with, but it could be.
I would expect it to be.
So let's go on. Amar Rav Meir. Al Zeh Ne'emar, right, on this case of a Shor Shaveh Matayim, that Gordon, Shor Shaveh Matayim, and there's no Nevela, it's not worth anything. Al Zeh Ne'emar, Umahru et the Shor Ahai v'chatsu et Kaspo. That's the verse from the Torah concerning the Tam. And they'll sell the Shor Ahai, they'll sell the living ox, the one that's Shaveh Matayim, v'chatsu et Kaspo, and divide up its money. Mm-hmm. So that each guy gets 100, the guy that did the damages out half, and the guy who suffered the damage is also out half. It's pretty simple when both oxen are worth the same amount of money.
Right.
Amar la Rabbi Yehuda, right? Said to him Rabbi Yehuda, V'chein halacha, and such is the halacha, you're right, I agree with you, that he has to pay chatzi nezek, as you just said. However, Rabbi Yehuda says the following, Kiyamta umachru et tashur achai v'chatsu et kaspo, you have upheld, you know, you've found an application of those words of the Torah. Sell the ox that's living and divide its money. V'lo kiyamta v'gam et emet yechatzun. But you have not upheld, you have not applied the words in the Torah. V'gam et emet yechatzun. And also the dead, they will divide up.
Because why wouldn't they divide it up when it's not worth anything?
Because right, that's the point. No. That's the point. In other words, it's not a clear question of halakha. It's a question of exegesis in the following sense. That Rabbi Meir said concerning the case of a shor that's worth 200, a shor that's worth 200, it's a tam, it gored this one, and there's no nevelah to speak of, there's no value. Rabbi Meir said, al zeh ne'emar, concerning that is stated, what the Torah said, v'machu et ashor achai v'chatsu et kaspo. But Rabbi Yehuda says, as far as the halakha, you're right, but as far as the exegesis, you're wrong. Because you have to look at the words in the Torah as a unit. And as a unit, it said, divide up the living one and divide up the dead one. Uh-huh. But in the scenario you gave Rabbi Meir, there's no dead one to divide up. You can't say that's the scenario of the Torah. It's an exegetical issue. It's not a issue of halakha. We agree on the halakha.
But it's also a practical issue. You know, a corpse of a dead bull is not an easy thing to schlep, even if it's not worth anything. You need to somehow clear it out of the street.
I have no idea.
First of all,
it's the responsibility of the Torah.
I'm not sure why they say the carcass is worth nothing.
Because it is.
It's just they want to say it so to make the math easy. It's that simple. This is a hypothetical circumstance,
right,
to teach us something. It doesn't necessarily relate to perfect facts.
Right, okay.
And it could be that, as Ilana was saying, it's not in a shop. It's a mess here on the street. So it may be that it's worth something, but not more than it takes to carry it away.
Well, okay.
So,
point. Yeah.
But the main thing is, it doesn't matter. We're just trying to say, we're trying to discern some rules.
Okay, fine.
But this could also relate to a situation where there's really nothing left to sell. I mean, you don't even have anything to sell.
We don't.
So you have to deal with a situation where selling the carcass is just not even something that would happen.
So I think you're saying that the
below glue
additional statement is saying.
Let's go on. Let's get the big picture.
Okay.
I think that they're saying here, Rabbi Meir, if you were trying to create a case that'll teach us a lot, you haven't made a case. You need to change your facts because we can have a better teaching case than what you've presented to us here.
We can have a case that better fits what the Torah said.
The Torah's example better.
Would we need to present what the Torah said? Is that what the whole thing is about? Understand?
Look at the words.
Okay.
When we had this case of a shor that's worth 200 and a shor that's worth 200 and the nevilah was worth nothing.
Uh-huh.
That was the case. Like I said, a hypothetical case. Rabbi Meir says, concerning that case, he says the following three words, Al Zen Emar, on that, concerning that, it was stated, and he quotes from the Torah.
Well, they're always doing that. You know, they wanted to...
Wait, we're not done.
Right?
Okay.
Rabbi Yehuda says, you can't say that the case we're discussing of 200 and 200 and the Neveh is worth nothing, you can't say that that's what the Torah was referring to.
Right.
Because the Torah says at the end of the sentence, and divide up the dead as well.
Okay.
And in this case, there's no possibility of dividing up the dead.
Okay.
It's so simple that you don't understand it because you can't believe it's so simple.
I'm still listening. I'm still waiting for what... The penny hasn't dropped yet.
There's no penny to drop.
Okay.
I think we should get to the end.
Okay. Then he says, so he said, you fulfilled, says Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, the scenario you gave fulfills half of the verse, but not the second half.
Right? Rabbi Yehuda says.
Yehuda says to Rabbi Meir, you fulfilled the first half of the verse, not the second half. Therefore, since both halves of the verse are really talking about one scenario that has two sides to it, you can't say that our case is what the Torah was talking about. Rather, there's going to be a different case that I'll give you the Torah was talking about. What is that other case? He says as follows, Be'ezit. Which is it? In other words, which is it that the Torah was talking about? I'll tell you. Zeh, it's this. Shor shave ma'atayim, shenagach shor shave ma'atayim. An ox that was worth 200, gourd when worth 200. That's the same part of the case. V'neveila yafa hamishim zuz. And the carcass is worth hamishim zuz. 50 zuz. Okay? Shezen notel chatzi achai, v'chatzi amit. That this one takes half the living and half the dead. And this one takes half the dead and half the live one. That's the case the Torah is talking about. That both of the oxen were worth the same thing. And the nevilah is worth something. And then in that case, they divide up the living, divide up the dead.
125.
So, and let's just do the math on the board. Let me get the thing. Right, so each one was worth 200.
That's right.
And that's what.
And the nevilah is worth 50. So we first have to think, so how much damage was caused?
200.
How much damage was caused?
150.
150.
Ah,
wait,
yes.
Someone's at the door.
No, that was me bumping my knee against the table.
So the damage was 150. If the damage is 150... only half of that has to be paid by the mazik, right? It's a tam. So what has to be paid
75.
Is 75, which means that I, who own the ox of 200, I'm going to end up with 125.
Right.
And the other guy is also going to end up with 125, because he ends up with the carcass and half of the damage. Half the damage is 75, so 1575 is 125.
Can you go over how we divide this up again? So
yeah, both oxen worth 200.
Right.
The nevilah is worth 50, which means the damage caused was 150 of damage. Right.
The damage caused
200 minus 50.
And
Well,
at the end of the accident, you have 250 of value.
At the end, you have 250 of value. That's true.
Okay, so that's true. How they both get 125.
But even without the 250 of value, how do we get to both 125? Because the damage caused was 150.
Okay.
Half of 150
75.
Is 75.
Uh-huh.
So the person who suffered the damage
gets 75.
loses half of the damage he suffered, which is 75.
Uh-huh.
So he ends up with his carcass, which is 50.
Uh-huh.
And half of the damage he suffered, 75, 75 and 50, is 125.
I didn't think that
just wait, so wait a second.
Should approach
so
it.
125 is how much they both get.
Yeah.
And how do we, in reality, create a situation they both get 125?
You sell the living bull.
Sell the living one. Each one gets half of that.
And sell
this, half of that. Each one gets 125.
Right.
So he's not going to leave with the carcass. They're going to sell everything.
Right, in the end,
right.
We divide up both of them. And each guy gets 125 of value, and each guy loses 125 of value, because we're talking about Tom.
Mm-hmm. But the case that this Mishnah is bringing is the case where there's no carcass to sell.
Right. No carcass to sell.
For whatever reason, there is zero value. There's either nothing left.
Maybe a bulldozer went over.
Maybe there's nothing left. It's been totally crushed.
When the oxes are equally valued, the owners get equal from the accident.
Yes, that's true.
So the message is, if you have a lesser vehicle or a lesser ox, you don't collect as much damages in an accident, no matter what happens. If your ox gores somebody else's ox,
yeah.
What if a 200 ox gores a 100 ox?
So that's... Let me say this. Look, once we establish what the case of the Torah is, we now have it. From that, we learn the principle of Chatzi Nezek. Remember, the Torah never said Chatzi Nezek. The Torah just gave a case of an ox that gored an ox and said, what you do in the end, divide the living, divide up the dead.
Right.
When we decide that the case the Torah was talking about was two oxen worth the same, that's when they divide up the living and divide up the dead equally. That brings us the principle of Chatzi Nezek. Then we apply that principle to other cases not mentioned in the Torah.
Such as unequal value.
But the principle is still going to be Chatzi Nezek. Exactly. Which means right. That when they're an unequal value, we're not looking at the value of the goring ox. We're looking at the value of the dead ox.
Dead ox.
And we're saying, how much value is lost? X. How much has to be paid? Half of X. Irregardless of the value of the ox that gored.
Right.
But when I say regardless, there's one caveat. We learned at the end of the end of the first chapter, that Tam pays Chatzi Nezek Migufo, from its body. Meaning it never pays more than its body.
Oh.
Right, so if we have a case...
The first ox was worth 50, and the second ox is worth 200.
Right. The first ox is never going to pay more than 25.
Okay. And 50.
So, 50, right.
Yeah.
It pays Chatzi Nezek up to the value of its goof.
So okay. If you have a cheap car, you don't have to worry about who you hit.
Something
as
like
long
that.
As you don't do
I
it
don't
on purpose.
I don't think it works that way.
Okay, let's
just
look at...
You don't have insurance.
Right.
So, all the questions I asked were pretty easy, I think. Anything we didn't cover, let's see. Everything we talked about.
Who not tell it to show? The Beit Din?
No. Who not tell it to show is the... owner of the ox that was gored. Right? Shor shaveh mane shenagach shor shaveh matayim ve'nevila yafa klum notel et ashor. He takes the shor, meaning the person who suffered the damage takes the shor that's worth mane, because that is half of the damage that he suffered.
Okay.
So everything is actually pretty clear, and nothing too special here, except four, we're left with one hanging thread, and I point it out not because I have an answer to it, but simply because it has to be pointed out, which is we really don't understand what is the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda.
Well,
I mean, Rabbi Meir knew that the verse said, divide up the living and divide up the dead. He knew that it said that. And when he said the Torah is talking about a case in which the living is worth 200 and dead is worth nothing. Well, he knew that the Torah says divide up the dead. How can you divide up the dead if it's worth nothing? So why did he say what he said? And if he said it doesn't matter, it's still you're dividing up nothing, then why did Rabbi Yehuda object and say you can't divide up? Like, we don't know what they're arguing over. Like, the law is clear, but what are they arguing
it's
over?
It's almost like there's something missing.
It's almost like there's something missing, something we don't know. And that should remain on our mind as we go through the rest of the Mishnayot of this chapter. The next chapter, perhaps we'll discover something that could shed light on this machloket. It's not a machloket.
So do you know the answer?
I'm not sure. I've been working on it for quite a while.
It sounds like you have an idea about it.
I had an idea until about 2 hours ago, but then I blew up my face.
I'm so glad. Thinking about
took it out of your head.
I had a whole other sheet prepared, and I just decided it wasn't that. Okay, let's go on to the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah is Mishnah Yud. 10. You know what? And actually, to understand this Mishnah, we're going to have to see a number of other Mishnayot and some verses in the Torah. So I'll just put the material on the table, and then we'll start reading. And we'll eventually get where we're going.
A green slide.
Yes,
like
thank you so much.
So the Mishnah says, Yesh chayav al ma'asei shoro ufator al ma'asei atzmo. Right? There is that's obligated or culpable on the deed of his ox and exempt on the deed of himself. In other words, if the same type of damage was caused by an ox, the owner is obligated, but if it's caused by the person himself, he's not obligated.
What?
Like, for example, there's a case where I bit you, and there's a case where my ox bit you. It's going to be different laws.
That would be different.
Well, we'll see examples.
Wouldn't Adam still be?
Well, I didn't say that my example is the example given in the Mishnah, but she asked
all right.
Patur al maaseh shuro v'chayav al maaseh atzmo. And there's also cases in which one is patur al maaseh shuro. He's exempt on the deed of his ox, doesn't have to pay the damages. V'chayav al maaseh atzmo.
Okay.
And on that same type of damage, he's obligated if he did it himself and not his ox. Then it gives examples. Shuro shibiesh patur. His ox that embarrassed means embarrassed someone. Patur.
I don't have to pay someone
for the embarrassment that, let's say, an ox ripped someone's clothing off in public and the clothing was not ripped. It just took it off. So that's a deed of embarrassment. That's busha. But patur. And not only is the ox exempt, the owner is exempt, right? V'hu shibiyesh, but if he embarrassed someone in public, chayav.
That's true.
Okay,
right.
I did the same act my ox did. My ox, when he did it, doesn't obligate me, but when I do it directly, I'm obligated. Shuro shesimeit ein avdo. An ox that blinded the eye of his slave, and it doesn't mean that the ox is a slave, it means the owner of the ox is a slave, and the ox that's owned by owner X took out the eye of a slave owned by owner X.
By owner Y, no?
No, owner X.
But they're both belonging to
the same person.
Or not only a case of taking out the eye, but also the peel at Shano and dislodged his tooth. Right? My ox dislodged the tooth of my slave. Patur.
Really?
Exempt. I'll explain in a minute. Exempt from what? Okay?
Okay.
Let's just read through the words. V'hu shesimeit ein avdo vi peel at Shano. But if he took out the eye of his own slave or dislodged the tooth of his own slave, chayav, then I'm obligated. I'm not saying on what is the obligation. Doesn't say it.
He needs to give him his freedom, no?
Right. We'll get into that in another minute. Ishuro shechaval baviv imo chayav. An ox that damaged its mother or father is
the
obligated.
The mother of the owner.
Which do you think?
The owner.
Right. An ox, if my ox did physical damage to my parents,
then I am liable
for the damage that my ox did to my parents. V'chu shechaval b'vivimo patur. But if I did physical damage to my own parents, I'm patur.
Really?
We'll explain in a minute what it means. I'm just getting up the curiosity here.
We just read it in the Torah. Yeah,
but wouldn't it be a criminal type of situation as opposed to a damages?
Right.
You're liable for the death penalty.
Right.
Yeah.
We just read it.
You're just not liable for damages, but you're liable in a totally different
somebody strikes their
type
parent,
of court.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the words are confusing, but the meaning actually is not confusing at all. As we will get into it, we'll go over it again and read the verses that each part of this Mishnah are based upon. And then it says, "Shoro shidlik et hagadish b'Shabbat chayav," an ox that lit up the haystack on Shabbat chayav. Chayav means that I, the owner of the ox, have to pay for the damage done by the fire caused by the ox. V'hu shidlik et hagadish b'Shabbat, but if I myself put on fire the haystack on Shabbat, patur, I'm exempt from paying damages for the fire that was caused to the haystack, mipnei shum mitchayev b'nafsho, because he's obligated in his own life.
He means the one who lighted the fire.
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. On Shabbos.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a principle at play. There's a lot of principles at play here.
Correct.
Let me just say the last one that came up here. It's called Kim Lei B'Derabamine, a very, very famous Talmudic principle that goes like this. Kim Lei B'Derabamine. So Kim means establish it, like Kayam, Likayem, or Kum, right? Kum means get up. Words mean to be, to stand, to be established, to exist. So, kim, I left out a word here.
Lay.
Lay.
Right. Kim lay. Kim lay, establish it, bi de rabah. In that is rabah, is great, rav, harbe. Mine from it. So again, establish it in that is greater than it. And what it means is that if there's two punishments you deserve for one act, you only get the more severe one. Kim le b'derabamine, establish him in the more severe, in the more rabbah. So, it's actually mitat beitin.
Ah.
So now we can go through the whole Mishnah with this that we have on the board, and with some other verses and Mishnayot, and understand what was happening here. So the first source we want to look at is one I brought here, Sefer Dvarim, chapter 25, verses 11 to 12, and then the Sifrei, the Midrash on that. So if you look at Dvarim 25, Chafhei, there's a frightening halakha,
which verse?
Chaf Hey Yud Aleph, 25:11.
That's a bit of Dvarim.
Yeah, it's a verse that has a number of different interpretations.
You say a page.
1064. Page 1064, Chaf Hey Yud Aleph, and the verse says, verse 11. Ki yinatsu anashim yachdav, when will strive men together?
This is an interesting one.
A man and his brother. V'karva ishet ha'ehad latsilat ishah miad makeu, and came close the wife of one to save her man from the hand of his striker. V'shalcha yada, and she sent out her hand. V'chazika bimvushav, and took hold of his private parts. And the word mivushav, right, literally means embarrassing parts. And the law is katsota et kapa, cut off her hand, lo tahos einecha, don't have pity your eye. Your eye shouldn't have pity. So there's a number of different contradictory interpretations to these verses, but I'll tell you the one that, well, let's see what the Midrash says. I brought one Midrash, there's opposing Midrashim, but the Midrash that is connected to what we're learning, it says like this from the Sifrei Dvarim, Latzil et Isha, to save her man, right, this is in B2 on the sheet, to save her man, Rebbe Omer, Rebbe is Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, Lefi Shematzinu, Sheyesh Mazikim B'Torah Shenasa Behem She'ein Mitkaven K'mitkaven. Translation.
Oh, right.
Since we found that there are damagers in the Torah that is made concerning them, the one who doesn't intend like he does intend. In other words, there's a case of damage in which intention is not relevant, and Ein Mitkaven has the same law as Mitkaven. Not intending has the same law as intending. In other words, it doesn't matter if I punch you in the nose intentionally or I meant to punch the wall and you got in the way. If I punched your nose, I have to pay.
Right.
Asa eino mitkaven ki mitkaven. It made not intending as if it was intending. It's not
doesn't
different.
Matter.
It doesn't matter. Yechol, I'm in the last word of the line, Yechol afkan, could it be even here? Could it be even here, in our case of the woman, that eino mitkaven is like mitkaven? Could it be if she did it unintentionally?
Well, how the heck could she do that?
It doesn't matter. It would be the same as if she did it intentionally. Could it be, says Rebbe? The answer is Talmud Lomar. The verse says, Talmud Lomar means the verse says, doesn't mean the Talmud says, it means the verse says, Vichzika bimvushav. She took hold of his private parts. It's a matter of grasping on purpose. Megid, it tells us, she'eino chayav, that it's not culpable, al boshit, on embarrassment, ad she'yitkaven, until he will intend. Why'd I read this whole thing? Why'd I bring this whole thing? Not for what the Midrash says, but rather for what it assumes. It assumes that these verses in Dvarim are the source for the obligation to pay boshit, to pay for embarrassment. That's the source according to the straightforward Midrash. How do we know that someone who harms someone else physically has to pay 5 payments, among them the payment for embarrassment?
Boshit.
We learn it from here, from these verses in Dvarim. And as opposed to other payments, the payment for embarrassment is only if you meant it, if you intended. In other words, I punch someone in the nose unintentionally, I have to pay for the damage I caused. But I have to pay for his embarrassment only if I did it on purpose.
So all the others, tsar, boshet, chevet, is regardless what my intentions are.
I'm happy you asked that. We're about to get to that. I think it's on the next. Is it here? It's kind of here. Let's see the next source. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Baba Kama, Perek Chet Mishnah Bet. Ze chomer ba'adam mibashur. This is the severity of man as opposed to ox. Sha'adam shalem nezek tsari pui shevet baboshet. That a man pays damage, pain, doctor bills, unemployment, and embarrassment. Umishalem demei vladot. And also pays the worth of the fetus, which relates to what we did this morning.
I know.
Right? In last week's parsha, there's a verse that has to do with abortion. And without going through the whole exegesis, it says if you damage a fetus and kill it, you have to pay. It's a tort. It's not a capital case. That's demei vladot, the money for the fetus. Vladot meaning here actually fetuses. So if a man causes damage, he has to pay the 5 damages. And if it's a case of an abortion, if he hits a woman in the stomach and she's pregnant and an abortion is called, he has to also pay, not only for her damage, but to pay for the fetus. V'shor eino mishalem ela nezek. But the shor, the ox, doesn't pay anything but nezek. In other words, of the five tashlumim we just said, mm-hmm. with five payments, nezek, tsar, ripui, shevet, and boshet, an ox, meaning the owner of the ox, of course, only has to pay the nezek, only has to pay the damage. But if my ox gored someone and caused damage, I have to pay the damage, but I don't have to pay the doctor bills. I don't have to pay for the unemployment, and I don't have to pay for the pain. I don't have to pay for the embarrassment. I just have to pay for the damage itself.
And also not veladot.
And if the ox hit a pregnant woman, I don't have to pay for the value of the fetus.
Okay.
So that's what's behind our Mishnah. If we go back to our Mishnah now and plug it in, going back to our Mishnah, I'll read from the beginning. Mishnah of the third chapter, Mishnah 10. Yesh chayav al maasei shoro fator al maasei atzmo. There is, he is obligated for the deed of his shor, but exempt for the deed of himself. Ufator al maasei shoro v'chayav al maasei atzmo. But there's cases of the opposite, where one is exempt for the deeds of his ox and chayav for his own deeds. And then, of course, we should put a colon there. It's going to give now a few examples of the principles we just put forth. The first example is Shoro Shabiyesh, an ox that caused embarrassment, among other things that it did. Pator, the owner of the ox, doesn't have to pay for the embarrassment of the
person. There's no damage to pay.
There could have been also damage. And the damage has to be paid.
Well,
but the
damage, but embarrassment is not something
emotional
that would get paid by...
Right, like the Mishnah said there in Baba Kama, chapter 8. So the owner of the ox is Pator. But if he, the person, caused the busha, caused the embarrassment, then of course, as we know from the Mishnah in the 8th chapter that we just read, you have to pay. And the source of that is the verses in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 25.
Well.
Of course, you can see that the rabbis are interpreting the words in the verse in chapter 25, Deuteronomy, the katsot et kapa, cut off her hand, to mean?
Pay.
Pay.
Right? To mean pay.
But only if she intended.
Only if she intended. Only if she chzika. Right? But if it happened inadvertently, the verses don't apply. And they also don't apply if my shor did it. Because a shor doesn't have intentionality.
Is it?
Right, we assume.
Sure.
But the man was embarrassed.
He doesn't know from embarrassment.
He was going to say that she didn't mean it.
That's a different question. How do we figure it out? That's something
this
else.
This is a proof of
that's
here,
why courts exist.
Okay. Yeah. And then it says, so now we get to the ox that...
Don't shame lawyers. I have a daughter who is a lawyer.
That...
my husband.
that caused someone's eye to lose its sight.
Mm-hmm.
And the someone is the slave. So that's the verse we read in last week's parsha that I brought here. That David just mentioned, I think, Shmot chapter 21, verse 26.
In Shmot 21, you find everything in the world.
Yes. Verse 26. V'chi yakeh ish et ein avdo o et ein amato v'shichata. If a man struck the eye of his slave or the eye of his maidservant, v'shichata, and it was destroyed, meaning the eye, lechofshi yishalchenu tachat eino.
That's actually nicer than the slaves were treated here.
To freedom, he shall send him in place of the eye. And then it says in the next verse, Vim shein avdo o shein amato yapil. And if the tooth of his slave or the tooth of his maidservant he will cause to fall, Chofshi yishalchenu tachat sheino. To freedom, he will send him in place of the tooth. So that applies only if I did it to my slave, but not if my ox did it to my slave.
Right.
So if you go to our Mishnah now, our Mishnah says, Sure, says Shimeit Ein Avdo. The ox that blinded the eye of the slave, he peeled it cheno and took out the tooth of the slave, patur. Mm-hmm. That is, the owner of the ox is exempt from what the verse says, that he have to set the slave free. Exempt from that. And exempt from everything. I don't have to pay the slave any damage money. The slave is a slave. Vahushisime, I'm going back to our Mishnah. Vahushisime et ein avdo vipilat sheino chayav. But if he personally, the owner of the slave, knocked out the eye or knocked out the tooth, chayav, chayav means chayav to send the slave to freedom. Mm-hmm. And then the last case in the Mishnah is the one about the parents. So that brings us to the verse that David quoted, Shmo 21, verse 15, which means we just go back one page in the art scroll. 21:15.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If one physically strikes his parents and causes any type of physical damage, mot yumat, death penalty. Mm-hmm. So what the Mishnah says concerning that, we're in the last 10 or 15 words of the Mishnah now. Shoro shechaval b'avivimo chayav. If my ox did damage to my father or my mother, chayav means I have to pay my parents for the damage. Obviously. Just like it's a normal case of goring, mm-hmm. of Karen. V'hu shechaval b'avivimo, but if he personally did the same damage to his father and mother, patur. Exempt, I don't have to pay the damage because I'm going to be
dead.
And it's not because I'm dead that I don't have to pay.
It's the bigger penalty.
Right, it's a bigger penalty. Like we have on the board, King Labor the Rabba Mine. And it goes so far as the following. This is what might be surprising. If for a technicality the court cannot inflict capital punishment on me, and I go free, I still don't have to pay.
Oh.
Because King Labor the Rabbine applies not only when the punishment, the greater punishment is inflicted, but even when it's not inflicted. The fact that it's there exempts me from the lesser punishment.
So in a way you go through only one trial.
And there might even be no trial because, let's say, no witnesses.
However, you take the case in our court system these days, where O.J. was found not guilty in criminal court, he paid penalties as a result of a civil suit.
Yeah, that to me was fascinating. How it
so can that happen. that wouldn't happen. Contrary
court
to
is
this.
Enough.
Right, that's a good point.
Why doesn't one court deal with everything?
We have a separation of criminal matters where the state is involved and civil matters.
Oh, it's an issue of state or
we don't have a concept. Yeah. We don't have a concept of an individual person can be the formal plaintiff or accuser, however you want to say it, in a criminal case.
Right.
In other words, you don't have the capacity to bring a criminal case.
No.
Only the state.
But you can bring a civil case.
Yeah,
civil is, between you and me, and criminal would be
the state
against me.
So we have a Mishnah that I wrote here.
Unique American?
Hmm?
That's unique American?
I'm British.
That's British.
And probably other legal systems, I don't know.
Anybody influenced by the British, probably.
The British, yeah, but whether it's also like Napoleonic Code and all the progeny of it, I don't know. But I bet it is. I think it is, yeah. This is somewhat unusual. This is not, this Talmudic approach is, I think, not modern law, as I understand it.
I think in Israel there's one kind of court. There are higher courts and lower courts, but once you're in trial, that's it.
Well, it can be the same court. A judge might do civil and criminal.
Yeah,
that's true in many jurisdictions. In the federal system, here, one judge, the same court, yeah, will do criminal cases and civil cases.
But it will be separate.
But
trials.
It's separate.
Yeah, yeah, and the difference is who's the accuser.
Yeah.
Who's bringing
in
the
Israel,
case?
In Israel, you could still have a Beit Din and the
mm-hmm. only in rabbinic cases.
Okay, what do you got?
No, I'm just thinking about what we just said. So let's look at the Mishnah I brought in B6. The Mishnah codifies the things we're talking about. Hamakeh avi vimo vasa ben chabura. He strikes his father or his mother and made a wound. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a wound there. Vechovel b'chaviro b'shabbat. That's a case that doesn't concern us now. Patur mikulan, exempt from all. All means the five types of damages we talked about earlier. Whether it's nezik, ripui, tsar, shevet, boshet. Mipnei shunidon b'nafsho, because he's judged in his soul, in his life, because he's guilty of the death penalty, kimle b'darabamine, like we said, and he's exempt.
You cannot hit on Shabbat somebody?
Okay, we can talk about that for a minute. V'chovel b'chaviro b'shabbat. If I cause damage to my friend on Shabbat, right, I don't have to pay for the damages. Why? Because I also violated Shabbat.
How did you violate?
And that trumps.
That's
how did you violate Shabbat? Bleeding is not allowed on Shabbat?
You're not allowed to draw blood on Shabbat.
Oh. And well,
and even if the blood didn't leave the body, but if you get black and blue, that's considered to be drawing blood.
Well, I'll stop beating people on Shabbat.
No, you should start.
Right.
You don't have to pay.
Ah, okay.
Right, but then you're obligated for violating Shabbat.
With your life.
What is that related to? It's under what kind of rule of Shabbos?
Yeah.
Which of the melachot is it?
Yeah, which melacha is it?
Shechita.
Is it really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Slaughtering animals.
Slaughtering animals.
You can't slaughter on it. That's right.
You can't slaughter a human being by
but
extension.
You could do something. Can you, like, kick them in a totally pointless way?
But what?
Aren't you allowed to do, like, totally pointless destruction?
Oh, right. Right. Very good. Oh, let me think.
But you can't destroy a person.
Ah, wait a second. That's a very good point. I don't know the answer to your question. I just don't remember.
So all wars stop on Shabbat?
Why?
Because it's a pikuach form of nefesh. Shita, no?
It's pikuach nefesh.
Ah, okay.
I think maybe in the old days there was a big problem.
Right, it says in the book of Maccabees, that they didn't make war on Shabbat until they came to the conclusion that they had no choice, and then they did the exegesis necessary.
Yeah, Israel had a war in Yom Kippur.
That's right.
Okay, well that's...
Shabbat of Shabbat.
That's a pikuach nefesh.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So anyway, we just have a few more minutes here to finish up with the Mishnah. We were now in the case of the striking parents, and we said that if you do it yourself, patur, means you're patur from paying for the damage because you have the death penalty. And then look at the last case. Shoro shidlik et gadish b'shabbat chayav. The ox that caused a fire on Shabbat, mm-hmm. it lit the haystack, chayav. Mm-hmm. So chayav means myself, the owner of the ox, has to pay for the damage it did to the haystack. Mm-hmm. And we should think for a minute how much I have to pay. We had a very similar case a few weeks ago.
With a rooster.
Yeah.
That came after the rooster. What animal was it?
It's a dog. It's
the dog. It's the dog case.
Yes.
So if we hold our fingers where we are and go back to the case of the dog, that was in chapter 2, if I'm not mistaken. And what we learned there was Mishnah Gimel, the second Mishnah. The third Mishnah, I'm sorry, of the second chapter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you show a page?
No, I can't actually.
Okay.
Damages and fall.
So it says the following, the second half of the Mishnah. It says, Kelev shenatal et ha'harara v'alach legadish. The kelev that stole the cake, that had a coal attached to it, and it went to the haystack. It's the same haystack, mm-hmm. right? achal et ha'hara, he ate the cake, v'dlik et ha'gadish, and the coal fell off and lit up the gadish, lit up the haystack. Al ha'hara mishalem nesek shalem, right? On the cake he has to pay full damage, v'al ha'gadish mishalem chatsi nezek. And on the gadish, the haystack, he has to pay chatsi nezek. Now we had a discussion when we learned this, why is it only chatsi nezek?
It was sort of a second level effect.
Right. We said that might be tzorot, it might be like pebbles. Just like the law of pebbles is, that secondary effect. It's walking, and inadvertently it shoots up pebbles, and they break something. That's chatzinezek. We said this might be the same thing, that since the kelev didn't take the coal in its mouth and put it in the haystack, but he took rather the
Harara,
and the coal just fell off of it like a pebble falls off of your hoofs when you're galloping. We said perhaps that's the reason why it's chatsi nezek. Now, we gave a second reason, which was simply that it's mishuneh. The second reason that it's just mishuneh. It's weird.
Oh, okay.
Weird. It's strange. Mm-hmm. And we have a rule that says any out of the ordinary nezek pays chatsi nezek, learned from Karen, right? Why do you have to pay only chatsi nezek for Karen? Because you don't expect your sure tam to do damage. From there you learn that unexpected damage, that is to say mishuneh, different, not expected, pays chatsi nezek. That might be the case here with the kelev and the harara and the gadish. It has to pay chatsi nezek because it's mishuneh, it's like Karen. So now, if we don't know which of the two reasons is the reason why you only have to pay chatsi, we can't really know how to apply it to other cases. Because we might have a case that's similar to this in one aspect, but not similar to the other, and we don't know. So with that information of what we don't know, let's compare it to what we're learning right now.
With the shor.
Right now is the shor. The shor should lick at the gadish b'shabbat. The shor that lit up the haystack on Shabbat.
And it doesn't,
you know what, just take away Shabbat for a second. Just think about it without Shabbat.
Yeah.
The shor should lick at the gadish. Somehow it happened that the shor got some coals, right? And it put them in the gadish and it got lit up.
Well,
so it's certainly mishuneh, but it might not be tzorot.
Right.
Right? It might have done it directly. So, how much does this shor pay? Well,
nothing.
If on our previous case we said the reason it pays half is because it's tzorot, then this should pay full.
Right.
But if the previous case was half because it's mishuneh, well, this one is mishuneh also.
And here is patur.
But the question is, patur and chayav of what? What would it pay if it had to pay? Would it have to pay half or have to pay full?
Well, this is
chayav. Chayav or patur. But what is it chayav? Is it half or is it full?
Oh.
That depends on everything we just said for the past 5 minutes.
Well, in the English it says, if his ox set fire to a stack of corn. I mean, it
yeah.
might have been a bad ox that...
So what? He carried matches?
Well, he was out of control. He was just
fine.
Bad.
It's certainly mishuneh. It's certainly strange. It's certainly out of the ordinary. Just like the case with the kelev, with the dog.
You can assume that you wouldn't want him to have done that.
I don't care. He wanted or not to do it. The question is, the issue is, it's not srod. It's not secondary nezek.
No.
It's certainly direct nezek.
Yes.
But it's mishuneh. But it's strange. It's out of the ordinary. So does it pay half? Does it pay full? It depends again on how we learned that Mishnah about the dog. So anyway, going back to our shur, leaving the dog behind, we learned that it says that the shur should lick at the kaddish b'Shabbat chayav. The ox that caused the fire in the haystack on Shabbat is chayav. Why chayav? Because the ox is not obligated to keep the laws of Shabbat. We don't care that it was Shabbat as far as anything. Doesn't matter. He caused damage. The owner has to pay. How much has to pay? That means what we talked about 5 minutes, what he has to pay. But the last case, v'hu shid lik at the kaddish b'Shabbat. But if he...
Patur, because he's now obligated for violating Shabbat.
Right, if he lit the fire on Shabbat and the gadish got burned down, he doesn't have to pay for the gadish. He's patur from that. Mipnei shu mitchayev benafsho, because he's obligated in the capital case. Kim leba derabba minei. Now notice how those last four words, mipnei shu mitchayev benafsho, apply not only to the last case, but also to the second to last case.
Yeah. Right.
When he struck his father and mother. So right. You see how the Mishnah there is saving words and leaving the punchline for the very end, even though you really needed to know it, and for the second to last case.
Although I would have expected on the case Ba'aviv Ve'imo, it would have said Patur, yada da da da. And then in this case just said Patur. That it would have given me the reason for it the first time.
Right.
Unless...
I agree, that would make more sense.
For some reason or other, that one was
I would say that for reasons of literary structure, to end with those four words, it saved them for the end. But then you ask me, so why does it need that literary structure? I have no idea.
So this rule of... it's, you know, you've said, and I take it, if a person's not liable for some technical reason, but there can be other reasons liable for the death penalty, right? But a person could be not liable for the death penalty for other reasons. For example, it could be a negligent act, right? Even if you're just walking along, you knock over the lantern and start a fire on Shabbos, that's not death penalty, right? Not for a technical reason, a warning or anything, but just it's not intentional. Is that not... So, or...
Well, if you...
You're right. Yeah. I think that kimlei applies even then.
Uh-huh.
I think that kimlei applies even then.
If you accidentally kick over the lantern...
On Shabbat.
And it causes damage...
You don't have to pay for the damage.
But I mean, if you did it on Monday, accidentally knock over a lantern and cause a fire, you're liable for that.
Right.
You have to pay...
For the damages.
For the damage.
Right, but
you didn't do it on purpose.
But I'm trying to understand why,
because
kimlei would apply there. Why that would be a violation of Shabbat if it was again an accidental happening? You were walking.
That was my question.
Yeah,
that's the question.
That's the piece I'm having.
We really aren't.
Other than you're really supposed to be paying enough attention to where you're going.
We aren't really bringing.
You still violated Shabbat unintentionally, but you did.
Right, but
a violation of Shabbat occurred.
Is a violation
occurred in the same act that damage was caused. As far as I remember, that's the law of kimlei b'derabba minei.
Okay.
Conclusion.
Okay, that's all.
Thank you very much.
It kind of reminds me of the myth about the city of Chicago, and Mrs. O'Leary's house.